You're listening to a podcast from the Today programme on BBC Radio 4.
And finally, and you can probably guess what I'm about to say, it's au revoir to Jim, not goodbye. Please note, he is not leaving the BBC and nor is he disappearing from this programme. We'll be hearing regularly from him in his new job, but after more than 20 years of presenting it, he's calling it a day. This is his last one in the presenter's chair. So, for the next few minutes, let's look back and listen again to some of his great moments. Amongst them, you will hear him asking Simon Cowell about his new baby, David Hockney talking about parties, Jim himself reciting some words for snow and finding the waterfall in Liberia that Graham Greene wrote about, and some memorable reporting from Kosovo in 1999, and the two of us broadcasting together for the first time in 1994.
Good morning to you from James Naughtie and John Humphreys. It's Monday, the 28th of February.
At night, the fireflies were a string of liquid lights along the road. The stars were clear, the sky was velvet black. A blissful scene. So the crackle of a gun or the sight of a tank lurching round a corner isn't only sinister but strange, as if the whole thing is a mix-up. You simply can't look across the border through the first ravine that carries the road north to Pristina and think easily about a battle that's probably been the most savage in Europe for more than half a century.
I'm not going to be a backseat driver because I think it's very important, and I made
well,
this
having
decision...
Having crashed the car, it's difficult to do that.
Above literature, said the Queen. Who is above literature? You might as well say one was above humanity.
It's not a bad line, Alan Bennett. Is it?
Well, I think she does come out with some very good lines. That's not one of them, that's one of mine.
I remember that the official buzzword from this week's Communist Party Congress in Beijing is harmony, instruction as encouragement. To be honest, it is rather easier to feel harmonious on the train, though there's nearly no English around, except from some determined British trekkers of advanced years, and quite a lot of Tibetan. You get that collective stab of adventure that trains are made for.
They're not meant to be worthy. They're meant, like I said, to be entertainment shows.
You've got great hopes for your son, obviously, and are very proud of him. You know, some listeners will be saying, oh no, when he's gone, there's another one coming along.
You said more than once in the course of the Scottish referendum campaign that you would be heartbroken if Scotland left. What word would you choose to describe your feelings if, under your watch as Prime Minister, Britain left the EU?
I feel about 1,000 times more strongly about our United Kingdom than I do about the European Union.
2 hours still to go before Barack Obama speaks. There's a queue a mile or two long still stretching back into Denver under a cloudless sky as the western sun sinks over there. They know that this is not simply a matter of politics, the celebration of the winning of a nomination, though that it is, and they seem to be at a rock concert as well as a political meeting. Stevie Wonder will be here in a moment. They understand that it is the beginning of the last phase of a presidential campaign which has already become the most remarkable in modern American history. We've found it. We scrambled down through the trees, a rocky, leafy slope there, in an opening in the canopy of the forest that allows sharp, long shafts of sunlight to come darting in and light up the scene. There are butterflies everywhere. There are two women bathing. And we've found the sacred waterfall.
Smer, Scalva, Flochin, Fluke, Spitters.
A misty moon winks down on the fireworks. A huge crowd is gathered in the dark beside what is a still stretch of water and, in truth, a low and unimpressive bridge. But it was here at exactly this time, just after a quarter past midnight, 65 years ago, that D-Day began.
I never leave the house. I mean, I go out to the dentist, the doctors, the bookshop, and the marijuana store. But that's it.
And you're on a mile from a party.
Yes, I do. Because I I mean, I can't hear, that's all. I mean, I'll tell you why at a party. I'd be there, but I'd not be there.
You said that there was a real effort to put things together, to repair things this week. Why do you think, looking back over these years, that effort was necessary?
It was necessary because within the party, or more strictly within the New Labour family, there has been a fissure. I mean, really, from the word go.
I heard this morning, I think, that some schools have stopped doing Shakespeare on the school curriculum. I think that there might be somebody who might be suddenly ignited by that and think they'd like to see more of it or hear more of it.
And what would ignite them, let's say, from that play?
I can only remember a bit of it, and I may go wrong on this.
No, that's okay.
I dreamt there was an Emperor Antony. Oh, such another sleep, that I might see but such another man. His face was as the heavens, and therein stuck a sun and moon, which kept their course and lighted the little O, the earth.
All right.
Yeah, good record.
Here we are.
Mr. President, James Lofty from the BBC. This is the most distinguished prison cast. This is one of the most distinguished broadcasters in the world.
Nobody's recording.
Honoured.
And I, in all honesty, loved playing with any band because I was playing. That was so what was important.
Ringo Starr talking to Jim, who is extremely proud of that. He's sitting here glowing.
Well,
why not?
It's taken me 50 years plus to get round to interview a Beatle. So.
Well, there you go, Jim. I tell you what, it was extremely difficult to put that together. Not because we struggled to find anything worth putting in it, but because of all the stuff we had to leave out.
Well, of course, the thing, as you know, on this programme, is that so much comes your way. You just sit here and it flows towards you in a wonderful tidal wave, like the one that Professor Adcock was talking about. It just comes up from nowhere, and that's the joy of this programme. Except when lines go down.
As they did this morning.
It was nice to end with that traditional ending of complete and utter silence on the air.
Absolutely.
But you know what it's like. We just sit here and extraordinary things happen.
It's a massive privilege, isn't it? But look, if you'd been putting that together, that few minutes that we've just heard, what would you have put in it, other than what we've already heard? Let's assume that you're happy with that, and you certainly seem to be. You were smiling a lot.
I think there are two things. It was lovely, and that music, which is an old Scottish fiddle tune that I chose on Inheritance Tracks on Saturday Live, is a lovely thing that takes me home. Mm. But, you know, I suppose both you and I feel that it falls into two categories, doesn't it? The one is that wonderfully sort of unexpected moment when a political figure, or indeed someone from, you know, any aspect of society comes out with something that changes a view or tells us something new or surprising, something they shouldn't say, or has a moment's silence, which indicates that we've won because they've found it impossible to answer. There's that. And then there's the business, which I know you love as well, of being on the road and trying to describe what something's like, because you're there as the eyes and the ears of the listener, and you've just got to explain what it feels like to be at, you know, Obama's nominating speech in Denver in 2008. And if you asked me for the bits that would take me back to that, they would be election trails, they would be the handover in Hong Kong in 1997, Kosovo, Iraq in 2003, and they would be that American race in 2008, the Clinton-Obama fight for the Democratic nomination in particular, and then the election that followed, because, you know, whatever your views stand on these matters, that election was one that crystallised so much of what America's about, as you know. And I remember with a producer being in Washington on the Monday, the day before Election Day, and we discovered that Obama had put in an extra meeting in Manassas, one of the cradles of the Civil War, only, you know, half an hour's drive from Washington. And we thought we would go for what you would laughingly call his eve of poll meeting. And we couldn't get across the bridge from Washington. And we thought there'd been a car accident. It always happens in the Keystone Bridge, as you know. So we just went back to the studio rather disappointed. And we found that the reason we couldn't get to the meeting was that 95,000 people had turned up. Ah. And you realise at the end of everything that race represented, there was something fundamental. Everyone knew there would be disappointment built into it. Presidencies never fulfil everything that they're meant to. But a campaign like that, to be there and to be able to describe it to people and say, this is what it feels like, you know, this is the texture of it, is a great privilege, and that's why you and I do what we do.
Yeah, it's the oldest cliche in the journalist book, isn't it? But it really is a ringside seat, having a ringside seat at history.
Well, and the smell of it, you know, an election night, and, you know, I'll still be doing election programmes for Radio 4. I'll still be on the road for the American election this year. And
tell us what you're doing before we leave this
point.
Well,
I'm going to be a special correspondent for Radio 4, doing essentially whatever I can dig up and whatever everyone wants to throw at me. But I'll be doing what I love, which is a lot of reporting. And I'll also be doing very regular book interviews and author interviews for this programme and indeed on the news channel, but working right across the programmes on Radio 4. So it's, frankly, a dream. And it does mean that at 2:58 and a half, that alarm will no longer go off to get me up in here. It will also mean, I have to say, that you'll have a tidier desk, John.
Well, look, I struggled as to whether I should get into this delicate territory or not.
I knew you would, so
well,
I was trying to get there first.
I mean, there have been those scurrilous rumours out there, haven't there, about how you lose your scripts and you get the time wrong and you ask very long questions and you chew your coffee cups and you doze off in the middle of the... I mean, look, none of
it's all true.
Confession time.
But, you know, yes, we were all characters, we're all individuals. And I think what I would say to everybody listening and to all of you who've sent nice messages, thank you very much, that you do get to know somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning.
For better or for worse.
Even if you're on the radio. For better or for worse. And I think this programme, the chemistry with all the presenters that we've all worked with over the years, is just one of the great privileges.
It is, isn't it? And the bits that you really didn't like, apart from getting up in early in the morning, the bits you really, or a bit, you've got time to give me. You have 15 seconds left, Mr. Naughty. I mean, this bit.
Things I haven't enjoyed.
Yeah.
Oh, getting things wrong. I can't remember who the culture secretary is at the moment, but anyway, we won't go there.
I wasn't going to go there. I think his name was Hunt, but yeah, no, yeah.
Okay.
We'd probably better. Now, look, you've got a minute to say goodbye.
Well,
and that's Jim, goodbye. We will miss you, I tell you that. Well, we will miss you a lot.
Another programme ends
and
another day begins, but 21 years, I suppose, it comes to this for me. And in a way, nothing changes. The programme goes on, and as I've just been saying with John there, I'll still be working for today and other programmes on Radio 4 as a special correspondent. There'll be much more on books and culture. All that continues and I can't wait for it. But it is inescapably a moment of change because you can't sit in this chair working with such talented and decent producers without being woven into the fabric of the programme, which I am. And with all the presenters down the years, especially Sarah, Justin and Michelle in recent times, as well as my old friend here, with whom I started and with whom I now finish, I'll be giving them my thanks. But all of you who listen need to be thanked too. You are the programme. Thank you. Our editors were Terry O'Neill and Tim DeFarmond, from John and from me. Good morning.
You can listen to more free content from the Today programme by going to www.bbc.co.uk/today.